Welcome, listener, to the Sharon Now with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. In England, where I'm from, as you can probably tell, we had a show called Desert Island Discs, where celebrities came on and talked about the music that they would take with them if they were going to be stranded on a desert island. Music to subsist by, in other words. And the wonderful Jason Feddy, who had a radio show on this KX935 station a while back, came up with the idea of doing his own version here in Laguna Beach. I thought that was a brilliant idea and was rather jealous that he'd thought of it before I did. But then I realized one would have to play all this music one didn't necessarily like oneself. You know, it would be only the choices of your guests. Lo and behold, I found an old English Desert Island Discs that had George Clooney as its guest of the week. And more miraculously, because I'm a big fan of George Clooney's, his music choices were really quite similar to what mine might have been. So I'm going to steal that show now and play it for you pretty much in its entirety with George Clooney's song choices. And if you're as much a fan of his as I am, maybe this will make you love him more.
Okay, well, now, every once in a while, you just have to put a song on that every time you hear it, you stop and you listen to, that you just don't get sick of it. There's some movies that I have like that, and there's songs. And Moondance by Van Morrison, can't go wrong.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. Fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. You know the sun seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more morning dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love? Well, I wanna make love to you tonight. I can't wait till the morning has come. Yet I know now the time is just right, and straight into my arms you will run. And when you come, my heart will be waiting to make sure that you're never alone. There and then all my dreams will come true, dear. There and then I will make you my own. And every time I touch you, you just tremble inside. Then I know how much you want me that you can't hide. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love? Or can I just make some more romance with you, my love? Sound of the breeze that blows. and I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low in all the night's magic. Seems to whisper and hush in all the soft moonlight, seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, oh my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, oh my love? One more moon dance with you in the moonlight on a magic night. La, 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 la. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love?
You are tuned to The Sharer now with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. My objective here on The Sharer now is to share with you anything that interests me in the hope that it will interest you. So if I come across another show that might have escaped your attention, I'm going to steal bits of it and recompile it. And that's what I'm doing with this very English show called Desert Island Discs. The concept of this is to ask celebrities what they would take with them if they knew they were going to be stranded on a desert island, what they would find would be sustenance while stuck there. And this show features the charming George Clooney and his music choices. Of course, it wouldn't be discs anymore. It would be on some other gadget that presumably would give you contact with the outside world. But we won't delve deeply into the logistics. This is just a rather clever way of asking people what really sustains them in musical terms. So you're going to hear what sustains George Clooney, along with a little bit of why.
I mean, do you have any idea, seriously, you're marooned on a desert island, could you cope, would you cope?
I'd be okay. I'm scrappy. I could build things. I used to work in construction. I'd find a way.
You strangle the rabbits.
I don't know that I'd be the great hunter, but I'd probably find a way to make coconuts taste like beef. Yeah.
That's the practical side of it, but what about the spiritual side of it? What about you being on your own, you know, talking to yourself?
Talking to yourself? Well,
the character building stuff we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd love that part of it. That'd be by far the most difficult.
And would you try to escape? Would you kind of put out to sea?
Yes.
I suppose if Perfect Storm is anything to go by, you'd never make it.
Well, I wouldn't make it. I didn't say I'd make it. No, it'd be more like Papillon. We wouldn't know if I made it or not.
Uh-huh.
I'd be building a craft of some sort to get out.
You would?
Yeah, why not?
But you might like being there, considering the kind of life, you know, you're sort of, I was going to say lumbered with, but I mean, you're obviously enjoying it, but you might just enjoy just leaving all this stuff.
Well, you know, it's the funniest thing because you don't really understand before it happens what it is. So you sort of go running right towards it, like, yeah, this is exactly what I was seeking. And then when you get there, you realize that the things that you thought would be great about it are not. But there are much more interesting things that come from it that you really appreciate. I love the ability to sit in an office at Warner Brothers, and just by virtue of the fact that I say, this is something I want to do, they'll make it.
And you're prepared to sacrifice your personal life and privacy for that?
I think that I have an understanding of the history of this. I also understand that it doesn't last for a particularly long time. If we had a show called This Is Your Life with Ralph Edwards, and he'd have Charlie Chaplin on there at 65 years old, and he's sitting there slumped over, and he'd go, Charlie, you owned all the studios. Everybody fell at your feet, and then tragedy struck. And then they're always kind of sitting there with their head slumped down, and you realize that's what's going to happen. So you have to sort of be prepared for it and understand that, all right, there's going to be a lot of things about this that are uncomfortable. Mostly, what they don't understand is mostly it's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing to walk into a restaurant and have some sort of a commotion when other people are eating. It's embarrassing if you have any sort of modicum of decency.
But essentially, the moral is, you know, seize the day, obviously.
Well, for me it is right now. I mean, I feel like, okay, this is now what I have. There's no taking it back. You can't undo it.
But you're grateful for it.
And I'm grateful for most of it, and I also understand, because I used to cut tobacco for a living, that you're not allowed to complain, because anything that you're doing is better than cutting tobacco. So that makes sense to me.
You're tuned to the Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. I'm playing for you tonight an English show recorded close to the beginning of the century, so about 15 years ago. It's called Desert Island Discs, and its premise is where celebrities are asked what music they would take with them if they knew they were going to be stranded on a desert island. And these are the inimitable George Clooney's picks, along with his reasons why.
What I figure is you need a reason to get off the island. If you play William Shatner singing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, then you will hollow out your own leg and make a canoe out of it to get off of this island.
Cellophane flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. Look for the girl with a sun in her eyes. And she's gone!
She's gone! She's gone! She's gone!
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. People eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you away. Climb in the back with your head in the clouds, and you're gone! Picture yourself on a train in a station with plasticine porters, with looking glass ties. Suddenly, someone is there at the turnstile. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
Well, that was George Clooney's reason to get off the fictional desert island. I'm playing an old Desert Island Discs show that he did tonight on this KX935's The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James. The singer was no other than William Shatner, aka Captain Kirk. Those crazy Canadians, eh?
Classic, really.
Truly awful.
Well, that's just to get me off the island. You know, if I could only take one. Oh, Dinah Washington, Destination Moon. I love the song. I love Dinah Washington. You just have to have Dinah on a deserted island, because I tell you, her voice just, it would sound pretty great out in the middle of nowhere.
Come and take a trip in my rocket ship. We'll have a lovely afternoon. Kiss the world goodbye, and away we'll fly. Destination Moon. We'll travel fast as a light till we're out of sight. The earth will be like a toy balloon. Oh, what a thrill you'll get riding on my jet. A destination moon. Oh, we'll go up, 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 up. Straight to the moon we two. High in the starry blue. I'll be out of this world with you. So away we'll steal in my space mobile, a supersonic, a honeymoon. Leave your cares below, pull the switch, let's go. A destination moon. We'll be high in the starry blue. I'll be out of this world with you. So away we'll steal in my jet mobile, a supersonic honeymoon. Leave your cares below, pull that switch, let's go. Destination. We're flying high up in the sky. Destination Moon.
One of George Clooney's favorite songs, Destination Moon, an appropriate song for Clooney, who hit the moon eventually with stardom, though it took him quite a long time and some rather awful parts to get there. Of course, it was when he played Dr. Doug Ross in ER that his star ascended. I'm Sharon James, and I'm sharing with you on this KX935's The Sharon Hour, Clooney's interview on a British show called Desert Island Discs, where celebrities talk about their favourite music that they would take with them on a desert island, and why, and what brought that celebrity, in this case George Clooney, to that point.
I'm much more successful than I ever thought I'd be, he says. It's harder to be nice when things are going badly. That's when you find out if you have any character. So now you're nice all the time, George.
That's right. Now I'm just nothing but nice.
And did you discover you had character?
No, but I'm at the point now where I can actually buy character. And I think that works out really well for me.
But did you have character? Did you discover you had character when you were doing such terrible things? People always, I know, confront you with these things. Is the revenge of the what tomato?
Revenge of the killer tomatoes. That gives you character, by the way.
Well,
what gives you character?
It turns you into ketchup, I assume you call from that film.
Well, what does give you character is the fact that they'll rerun it every once in a while. You have to apologize, to send out letters of apology to pretty much everyone.
But there were some terrible parts, and I'd like to talk about more of them later.
Okay, thanks. That'll get me some character.
But when ER came along, when that part was offered, mid-90s, right. Did you spot it for what it was? Did you realize this is the one that's going to make me?
The minute that we got the Thursday night at 10 o'clock on NBC, I knew we had a hit show. I knew we had a seven-year show.
A seven-year show?
Sure. There'd only been two shows in that time slot in 20 years before that, Hill Street Blues and L.A. Law.
But did you think you had the right part? Because, of course, you ended up being Doug Ross, as I say, the heavy-drinking womanizer. You wanted to be the nice guy, didn't you, Mark?
Well, yeah, I did. I auditioned for Mark. No, it was interesting. You know, when you see the pilot, I'm in five scenes. I mean, it's really by far the smallest part. I didn't care. I'd gotten to the point where I realized that I wanted to be in good projects, and I didn't care the size of the part. I just thought it's never harmful to be in a good film or to be in a good television show.
Sure. The problem, of course, was not that, you know, all the women of the Western world fell in love with you, and some men too, but that everybody thought you were this person, this heavy-drinking womanizer.
Well, you know, the funniest thing is, in the opening scene in the pilot, I come in drunk, and in the pilot, I try to pick up three different women. After that, I don't believe there was ever another scene where I was drunk in 5 years of doing it. But it's whatever you sort of get, you know, whatever your first scene is pretty much what you are.
So it's everybody's fantasy, you see, that's what it is.
Yeah, it was mine. I liked it. It was fun.
Superstar, where you from? How's it going? I know you got a clue what you're doing. You can play brand new to all the other chicks out here, but I know what you are, baby. Look at you, getting more than just a re-up. Baby, you got all the puppets with the strings up. Baking like a good one, but I call them like I see them. I know what you are, baby. Womanizer,
right for you. You just can't find the right companion. I guess when you have one too many makes it hard. It could be easy who you are. That's just who you are, baby. Lollipop, must mistake me, you're the sucker. To think that I will be a victim, not another. Say it, play it how you want it, but no way, I'm never gonna fall for you. Never you, baby.
Well, that was my choice of song, not George Clooney's. And maybe it's an unfair assessment of him, but of course it was his reputation back 15 years ago when this Desert Island Disc show was originally recorded. And why not, when you're that handsome and charming and deferential and smart and well-informed? Really the quintessence in my mind of what a man should be. George Clooney is, by quite a remove, my guest on tonight's KX935's The Share an Hour. He is here being interviewed for Desert Island Discs, an English show that asks celebrities which music they would take with them if stranded on a desert island. His choices are very similar to what mine might be, though I'd take his Auntie Rosie Clooney's albums with me for sure. Here she is bemoaning her own womanizer crush.
Lately when I'm in my room all by myself, in the solitary gloom I call to myself. Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes. Love never made a fool of you. You used to be too wise. Hey there, you on that high-flying cloud. Though he won't throw a crumb to you, you think someday he'll come to you. Better forget him, him with his nose in the air. He has you dancing on a string. Break it and he won't care. Won't you take this advice I hand you like a mother? Or are you not seeing things too clear? Are you too much in love to hear? Is it all going in one ear and out the other? Hey there, you
stars in your eyes.
Are you talking to me?
Love never made a fool of you.
Not until now.
You used to be too wise.
Yes, I was once.
Will you take this advice? I hand you like a mother. Or am I not seeing things too clear? Are you just too far gone to hear? Is it all going in one ear and out the other?
George Clooney's famous aunt, Rosemary Clooney's dulcet tones, brought you tonight on this KX935's The Sharon Hour. But Rosie was not the only star in the family.
You were familiar, of course, George, with kind of small-time fame, as opposed to what you have now, when you were a little boy, because your dad was a television personality in Kentucky, wasn't he?
Yeah, he had an interesting life, my father. He's still alive, he's still working. He writes for, he has a syndicated column in about 100 cities.
So he's a workaholic like his son,
is he? He is. Oh, at one point he had 5 full-time jobs at the same time. That sounds like impossible, but he was doing a 6 to 10 a.m. radio show. He was doing an 11:30 variety show from 11:30 to 12:30. He did the 3:30 Money movie. On Mondays, he would fly to New York, and he would do 5 episodes a day of a game show called The Money Maze. And he was doing a play called Barefoot in the Park at night.
But what was this show he was doing when you were a little boy and you were on it?
Well, he had the Nick Clooney show. We worked, it was a live TV show, and we would every day be on the show, and we'd do commercials, and it would be for Hussmann's potato chips, and I'd put on an outfit, and my dad would interview me about Hussmann's potato chips, or if it was St. Patrick's Day, I'd put a leprechaun outfit with a cigar, and my dad would say, "This is a big day for you, is?" And I'd be, "Yes, oh, it's a big day." Easter, I'd be in an Easter bunny outfit. It didn't matter. It was Christmas, I was an elf. Had been left out.
But what about at school? You must have been teased something wrong.
Sure, because we moved around so much. It was sort of Gulliver's Travels, and you could reinvent yourself each time. So I would go from being the smart kid to being the athlete to being the dumb kid. You know, it didn't matter. You could pick what you wanted to be, really.
But the children of famous people get a lot of stick.
Yeah, you do. It depends. You always get a lot of attention. And that's, you know, my sister didn't like it, and I was okay with it. I understood how to handle it. I knew that if I made jokes about it, I'd be okay.
But you also must have understood the roller coaster life of being famous, because, of course, mm-hmm. there was one point when you were quite small, I think, that his show was just dropped overnight. He was unemployed, wasn't he?
Well, he dropped the show. They came to him and asked him to get rid of the band, who were all of his friends and were working for him, and the singers, there were singers on the show, and changed the format of the show. And he said that he had a responsibility to these people and he wouldn't do it. So he pulled the show and then was banned from working for a year within a 100-mile radius. And he fought it and won with like 2 weeks left. And he went back to work. So we had a year of unemployment that was really tough because we ended up moving into a trailer and living sort of a very – It was a difficult time because my father was always very good at taking care of the family, and I think that was a tough time for him.
So eventually you went to university to study journalism, but as I understand it, you just didn't. I mean, you didn't study anything.
I pretty much didn't study. Yeah, because I was raised in a really strict household, the minute I got away to school, I was just thrilled to be out of the house, and I was out living the life very quickly, which was probably my greatest learning experience.
Real lives, particularly those of celebrities, aren't always the privileged lives we imagine. You're tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935, playing you tonight an English show called Desert Island Discs, where celebrities choose the albums, as they were at the time, record albums, that they'd take with them on a desert island if they knew they were going to be stranded there. This particular show features George Clooney with his picks.
Pink Floyd, Brick in the Wall. You know, you can't go wrong with Pink Floyd. And why not have a bunch of people singing so that you feel as if you're not alone on the island?
No wonder the most imaginative amongst us rebel at some point in our school lives. Certainly George Clooney did, as you're going to hear. His life, his favorite music is the focus of tonight's Kicks 935's The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James. I'm playing an interview he did for a British show called Desert Island Discs, where celebrities pick their favorite music and along the way reveal something of their lives.
Journalism was the only class that I stuck it out because I thought I was going to be a news reporter like my father had started out. That's sort of the great thing about my father is he started out as a news reporter. He ended up then for about a 8-year span having a variety show in that sort of time when variety shows were very big. And then he did almost the impossible, which was reinvent himself to becoming a really good news presenter again. Mm.
And he made it big then in Cincinnati, didn't he?
Huge, yeah. Anchor. He was the biggest by far.
Is that in you then? Is that determination, you know, even when the chips are down? Do you feel that's in you or are you, as quite often the kids of such parents are, a bit softer than that and haven't quite got that drive?
Well, I have that drive. I don't think I have the integrity my father had. You know, my father lost most of his jobs over the years because he held people to stand by the letter of their word. And I work very hard to do that myself. But I will fall short that mark.
Does he think you fall short of the mark?
I don't think so.
What does he think of you these days?
We've become really great allies. You know, we're both sort of hopelessly liberal Democrats and politically active, and it's very fun. You know, I'd say twice a week we're on the phone for about 2 hours sort of rehashing things that are happening in life, and he's certainly the touchstone whenever, you know, I got in some trouble in the States because I went after the Bush war policy, and I was getting killed by the sort of the right-wing radio and television, really killed. Mm. I mean, beaten up really badly. So I always have to make sure I'm doing the right thing. I called my dad up and we talked for a couple of hours.
And what did he say? You should shut up that you were a Hollywood star and you shouldn't
talk. My dad's the guy that says, don't come back and look me in the eye if you don't say something. When we were kids, Kentucky was very, you know, I was born in 61, so we weren't really all that far ahead of having black and white drinking fountains. You know, it was really segregated. We'd go to dinners with my father. You know, he'd go to some function or some dinner, and the minute that anything would lean towards any kind of bigotry at the table, my sister and I knew that we had to start woofing down the food as fast as we could because my dad was going to make a scene and leave.
But when you made Three Kings, which of course was made about the Gulf War, 91 Gulf War, right. And that was extremely critical of the American regime, wasn't it, saying what a ridiculous position they put these boys in out there. Presumably he approved of that.
He loved it.
What now, then? What do you feel now about... Did you join the Peace March in London?
I was in Berlin. I got to march in Berlin.
You did?
It was an amazingly different feeling because there's a difference when people are marching in praise of their government stance as opposed to trying to fight against it. There was a real joy, and it wasn't just about the fact that they were all showing up, but they were proud of the stance of their government. It's really interesting. I mean, look, my dad is proud when I stand up and talk about things that people don't talk about. I think it's important to.
Which Hollywood stars don't normally talk about.
It's not just your right, but your patriotic duty to question the actions of your government.
Quite right, George Clooney. You're tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's one and only FM listener-supported, member-supported public radio station, KX935. I'm playing you an interview George Clooney did for an English show called Desert Island Discs, where he discusses what he believes in and what his favourite songs are. I'm going to hear a couple more after the interviewer asks him about his, let's say, eclectic acting past.
It seems to me you had this rather checkered career all through the 80s. What was the worst part, apart from the tomatoes? What was the worst part you ever did?
I did a show called Sunset Beat, where I played an undercover cop on a Harley during the day and a rock star at night. That's a script I should have read before I took the job.
You do read them now, though.
Oh, yeah. And after Batman and Robin for films was when I really realized that if I was going to be the guy that was going to greenlight a film, get it made, that I had a responsibility not just to the role and to getting a job, but to get the films that I thought were proper to get made.
So we're not going to see Batman and Robin 2?
Well, you know, if every movie I do tanks for the next couple of months, yeah. Well, I don't know. I've destroyed that franchise, I believe.
You hope not, huh?
Oh, I hope I have destroyed that. Certain franchises you should destroy.
Getting back to this workaholic thing, it seems to me when you did ER, which you did for 5 years, you honoured your contract, although you started to make it big. It was a full-time job, but during the whole of that time, you made 8 feature films. Now, I mean, was this... sounds like escapism of some kind.
That's exactly what it was. No, I understand.
Escaping from what?
Exactly. My past, my bad television past. I needed to sort of start to establish films while I was doing a TV series if I was going to hope to go past that point. And I realized that it was a perfect time for me. I was 33 years old. I was in the right age to start to be, you know, a little bit older leading man.
And you did several movies, but it seems, looking at your career, would you agree with this, that it wasn't until you did Out of Sight with mm-hmm. Jennifer Lopez that somehow, although you'd done a film with Michelle Pfeiffer and with Nicole Kidman before, somehow that was the one, 1998, wasn't it, when it all began to take off. Now, why was that? You must have analyzed it.
It's so hard to find a really well-written part. This film came around. I read the screenplay. I thought it was beautiful. When Steven was attached later as a director, that seemed like the great choice, Steven Soderbergh. The surprising thing is that I always thought that when I got to the position I'm in right now, that the scripts that you would get are just, they're all great. And the truth is I read, you know, 6 or 7 scripts a week still to this day, and I read maybe a script a year that I'd like to do, 2 at best.
Really? That few?
There really aren't very many.
And you said that's because Hollywood kills scriptwriters.
Because they don't write screenplays out of love anymore. They write them out of development deals.
Yeah.
Problem is that it ends up being sort of a pasteurization of a story that they would have told. And that takes all of the life out of it.
Yes. Until someone like you comes along. And I want to talk to you about, I think, what's now called actor power, because that can change all of that. We'll talk about it in a minute. Tell me about your 4th record.
You know, you got to have a classic in there. And I went for Frank Sinatra singing Nice and Easy, because if you're stuck on an island, you got to have a little Frank.
Let's take it nice and easy. It's gonna be so easy for us to fall in love. Hey, baby, what's your hurry? Relax and don't you worry. We're gonna fall in love. We're on the road to romance, that's safe to say. But let's make all the stops along the way. The problem now, of course, is to simply hold your horses. To rush would be a crime. 'Cause nice and easy does it every time. Let's make all the stops along the way. The problem now, of course, is to simply hold your horses. To rush would be a crime. 'Cause nice and easy does it. Nice and easy does it. Nice and easy does it every time. Like the man says one more time. Nice and easy does it. Nice and easy does it. Nice and easy.
Nice and easy does it for George Clooney. But of course, it doesn't hurt to have a certain modicum of fame to make life nicer and easier. And George, who I'm featuring on tonight's KX935's The Sharer Now, has achieved that. And it means he can make less compromised choices when it comes to the films he involves himself with.
You didn't even take a fee on O Brother, did you?
No. Well, I mean, $125,000, so that's more money than most people make. So, yes, I did, but not the kind of money that I get.
And gave half of your fee back on Three Kings, I think, in order to
Three Kings
the film
I
finished.
Gave exactly half back, yeah.
Yeah.
But the reason is because those films won't be made otherwise. Mm. So it's an interesting sort of battle.
And it's different. This hasn't happened before, has it?
Well, it has in a way. You know, Jimmy Stewart took a percentage and Betty Davis took a percentage, and they were people who were smart about getting films made. But it is coming back around again. And the good news is that with the success of some of the films that I have had over the last couple of years, it's starting to get more attractive to people to make them like that.
Okay, in case you just tuned in, two things. First, to say, please do stay tuned to our station because we do have emergency alerts. And even though you may have Alert OC or Nixie on your phone, sometimes your smartphone won't work where our radio waves will. Those radio waves here specifically to Laguna Beach being KX935 FM. This show is The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, and tonight I'm featuring George Clooney on an old English show called Desert Island Discs, where celebrities reveal the record albums, as it was in the day, that they would want with them if they knew they were going to be stranded on a desert island. Coming up next is one of the record albums Clooney has chosen, and it's a somewhat unexpected choice, I think you'll agree.
See, the thing is, I'm a big Bobby Darin fan, and I was going through all of the Bobby Darin songs that I really love. And, you know, Mac the Knife just plays over and over again. I love it, but I've heard it a million times, and there's some really obscure ones.
This is your father's influence, isn't it?
Well, not really. This was sort of a little bit of Rosemary, but my friends and I all listen to Bobby because he could do anything. He'd sing rock and roll like Splish Splash, and then he'd sing great old standards. But Artificial Flowers is sort of the most overproduced song you've ever heard in your life. You know, this was a huge, huge hit in the States in the 60s, and it's one of those songs where no one actually really listened to the words, they just loved the tune so much.
Alone in the world was poor little Anne, as sweet a young child as you'd find. Her parents had gone to their final reward, leaving their baby behind. Did you hear this poor little child was only 9 years of age when mother and dad went away? Still she bravely worked at the one thing she knew to earn her few pennies a day. She made artificial flowers, artificial flowers, flowers for ladies of fashion to wear. She made artificial flowers, you know those artificial flowers, fashion from Annie's despair. With paper and shears, with some wire and wax, she made up each tulip and mum. Snowflakes drifted into her tenement room, her baby little fingers grew numb from making artificial flowers, those artificial flowers, flowers for ladies of high fashion to wear. She made artificial flowers, artificial flowers, made from Annie's despair. They found little Annie all covered with ice, still clutching her poor frozen shears. Amidst all the blossoms she had fashioned by hand, watered with all her young tears. Heavenly gardens and bowers, and instead of a halo, she'll wear around her head a garland of genuine flowers. No more
society to wear. Throw away those artificial flowers, those dum-dum flowers. Fashion from Anisa. Fashion from Annie's despair. Give her the real thing.
That was Artificial Flowers, sung by Bobby Darin. And I have to say, it's a terrible song, Joel.
I just love it.
You're listening to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX935. I'm playing you an old English show called Desert Island Discs, where celebrities choose the music that they'd take with them if they were stranded on a desert island, while at the same time being quizzed by an interviewer about their lives. This particular show features George Clooney, but it's an old show from about 15 years ago, so some of what he has to say is going to sound dated. Certainly later on it will sound quite dated, given what we know of him now. But he's being asked by the interviewer about the films he's made, basically parlaying his fame into making the kinds of films that he really wants to. And that concept probably hasn't changed much in this past decade and a half.
Two of the films that you've now made through your own company, one way or another, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, based on the bizarre autobiography of Chuck Barris, who invented what we call actually blind date, not the dating game,
right.
and the gong show, didn't he? It turns out that's his day job, and by night he's a CIA hitman. Can this be true? Well, he says it is. It is a great story. How was it for you behind the camera for a change?
I loved it. I loved it. You know, I came in really prepared. With the storyboard artist I worked, we did 980 drawings. I sketched out every shot and every scene.
There's going to be a lot of people, fans, upset if you disappear behind the camera for good. You're not going to do that, are you?
No, I like acting. I'm still trying to figure acting out. I'm not looking to direct again. If I find a script that I have an understanding like I had of this one, then I'd do it again. This is a script that has been held up as the best unproduced script ever. It sort of fell in between the cracks. It wasn't cheap enough to make as a small independent, and it wasn't big enough to make at the studio.
So are we into the power of George Clooney here again?
Oh, this one was a force-feeding of me, because the film had been put into turnaround, basically put in a trash bin. So I picked it up and said, look, I think I can get the film made. My feeling is, if you look at the way my career has gone, Out of Sight flopped, didn't make any money at all, and it's a really good film. And now people have, you know, come around to thinking it's a wonderfully made film. Steven's very talented, Steven Soderbergh. Three Kings barely made its money back. Oh Brother was right on the border, made a little bit of money back, but not that much. So my feeling has been, with films like Confessions and with Solaris, I can stick around for 5 or 6 years and see how they hold up. Because the trick is to make them last longer than an opening weekend.
Quite. The film in which you're very much in front of the camera, the whole time, I think, in Solaris, you're in practically every shot there is.
I think pretty much every shot.
It's quite deep. It's about a psychiatrist who's sent to a space station where the crew's going quietly mad, and there he meets his wife who died, and it's kind of, is there an afterlife? Was it the most difficult role you've acted?
Oh, yeah, by far. But that I knew going in. You know, we also knew that we were going to make a film that was really polarizing, that people are going to come out and really love it or really hate it, you know.
But that film and Confessions, I mean, they've both been very much your babies in different ways, as mm-hmm. we've just described. You have spent hours, 16-hour, 20-hour days on these things. It's used you all up. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that when you're at your happiest, when you're immersed in work?
Yeah, right now that's where I'm my happiest. You know, you have a window of opportunity where you get to call the shots and you get to, at the end of the day, say, this was my stamp on this. This was what I think of if I had the opportunity. I don't think that window is open for a very long period of time. So in that period, I want to work and I want to try and get things done.
And then you've got a body of work. That's what you're trying to do, isn't it? Create a
Sure.
body of work that you can actually stand up and be counted by.
Right. Well, you don't want it to be Batman and Robin 1, 2, and 3. And you know what? I mean, you get to a point where you go, well, I have money. You know, I have some money, I'll be okay. And I'm perfectly capable, if I have to, of downgrading, if I have to, as well, financially.
You're tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX935. I just wanted to point out that this interview I'm playing you from a British Desert Island Disc Show, where George Clooney is the one being interviewed, is from 15 years ago, when, of course, George was famously single.
What do you do when you're not completely immersed in work? I read stories of kind of ridiculous boys' house parties and practical jokes.
Well, there's a lot of practical jokes. I have the greatest friends, you know, for the last 20 years. So it's not a bunch of sycophants. They're good friends.
What do you do there when you hang out together? What do you do?
Well, we all have motorcycles and we ride. You know, we play basketball every Sunday and we watch movies. And sometimes it gets sort of mushed into this idea that it's somehow the Playboy Mansion or something. You know, these are all guys with families and kids, and we all want to be together. We're all close, really close friends. We're proud of it now. Now we've gotten to the point where it's a real source of pride for us.
But you're 42? Yes.
41, thanks.
41, sorry.
Don't rush me.
You're 41, famously single.
Yeah.
I read you have a lot of fear of becoming an aging Lothario.
Oh, well, you know, everybody has that.
Well, at what stage do you get to be aging?
Well, probably about 5 years ago. That's the funniest thing about it, is that you don't sit around going, okay, that's it, I'm staying single. Or, you know, that's not the idea, obviously. The question is when that changes, and I don't know when that changes. Everybody's sort of looking to be happy. I mean, we all have the exact same wants and needs. It's just finding sort of something that fits into the life that you've worked out.
Sure, but there isn't any space in your life from what you describe.
Not recently there hasn't been because of the work.
But you're not saying never.
No, I said never once in one interview with Barbara Walters about 9 years ago after I'd just gotten divorced. And I've been living that one down ever since.
Except, of course, he did get married and is now the father of twins. I don't know if any of you saw the recent AFI, American Film Institute, tribute to George Clooney, but the love expressed by her for him and him for her was really something quite moving and seemingly very sincere. So let's see if this is a love for the ages. That concludes my share and hour for tonight. If you'd like to hear this show again, it podcasts on iTunes, or you can go to kx935.com/shows/the-sharon-hour. That's sharing without the G, hour with the H. I'm Sharon James, wishing you a wonderful week ahead. And do come back and listen again to more chat, songs, interviews, and topics on a wide variety of subjects that I hope will be of interest.